Welcome to episode 4 of the Sunday podcast. As always, you've got the pleasure of listening to myself, Ollie Lum, and my co-host, Matt Seddon. This week, we spoke to sub-4 miler and European cross-country medalist, Tom Marshall.
Guys, enjoy the podcast. It's actually a belter this week. With Tom Marshall, he gives us a really honest and true account of life as a full-time athlete and a full-time worker.
Tom's recently been sharing his weekly training with his Twitter followers, and you can find him at TomMarshall1500. Enjoy the podcast, guys. I might be slightly biased, but it's a good one.
Hey, hello, lads. You okay?
Yeah, not too bad. Welcome to the podcast, Tom.
Thank you, mate. That is a solid task going on here, Ollie. I love that.
Yeah, I think it was a bit better in the summer. Then I shaved off and then brought it back.
I'm proper impressed. You boys keeping well, yeah?
Yeah, mate, not bad. You going for the tash, mate? Or is that just a bit of stubble?
Bit of stubble, mate. I forget. Every time I get to like day 4 and I start shaving, I'm like, oh man, and half of who's shaving. And I'm like,
that working from home, mate.
Do you know what? I'm really enjoying it now.
Oh, really?
You get used to it, don't you? And actually, going for runs at lunch, spot on. Yeah. It's much better than getting up at 5:30 in the morning, driving for an hour and a half into work, and then going for a run, being knackered when you get home.
Yeah, I bet. You've been training today?
Yeah, did 8 miles this morning at lunchtime, and then not long finished the weight session, just smashed a curry after, actually, but other than that, weights, curry and a beer.
Beer with the curry.
Beer with a curry, always a cobra. Professional as always, gents.
Yeah, got it. We'll just get cracking then, I think. I first kind of just wanted to ask you, Tom, about kind of recently, you've just been publishing your training every week. And I think it's been really interesting to see. And I think the main thing for me is just how open you've been with kind of the responses that people have given you. I think a lot of people have sent you questions about more details and stuff. And then I think a lot of athletes, me and Matt have discussed, are quite secretive about what they do. And I just wanted to find out kind of your motivation behind publishing it in the first place.
Yeah, it's something I've thought about for quite a long time, well over a year, I'd say now. So many people have given so much to me in this sport, all my trainer partners, my coaches over the years, and particularly James Fee, you guys, everybody that's sort of surrounded me have given me their love, their passion, their knowledge. They've never charged for it. They've never asked for anything back other than commitment. And actually, I wondered not long ago, what could I do back to this community? What could I give back? Because actually, you look at running and it's such a nice bunch of people. So seldom do you find a person in a running world that's not very nice. And it's just a lovely place to be. It's the most accessible sport out there. So what could I give back? And the way I looked at it was, I'm lucky I've got a half decent platform. I've got a half decent, I guess, following, and I'm quite an engaged following. I've been looking at the platforms. I'm going, okay, how can I give it back? And I hate Facebook, never Facebook. And Instagram is so visual. Nobody really listens. They just see your photos. So I thought, what can I do to give back? And actually, one thing I've never seen, and it's Dan Nash. It was Dan Nash that gave me the idea, because he started doing his marathon training. And then I thought, well, actually, that's the perfect time to do it. So why not? Why not give back to the community, tell them what I do? And I guess a niche that I have is that I compete at a decent level and work full time. And actually, the majority of people that are training are in that bracket. 99.9% are in that bracket. So it's just giving them an indication that yes, it can be done, and this is how I do it. So that's the motivation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you touched upon it just there as well. And it's that, I think we wanted to really talk to you about how you actually balance that full-time work, because I think you've said before, just you consider yourself a full-time athlete and a full-time worker. You don't consider it to be you work full-time and you train on the side. You do consider it that you're a full-time athlete as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's the only way you can look at it to actually justify doing it at the level that you want to do it. I think it's tricky, and there's an awful lot of, you've got to have great timekeeping skill. You've got to have a really good motivational skill, I think. If I just look at Yian as an example, I see Yian go out every night and he does 80 miles a week working full time. And it's just that desire for him to get to that level and compete at those major champs. That's a motivation. And actually, the biggest thing I find is just finding a time to do it. So if you are working full-time, 9 to 5, whatever it might be, set aside an hour and a half at lunchtime to go out, get a run and shower, and then actually come back, have your food prepped, have it ready to go, eat it whilst you're working. If you have an honest conversation with your bosses as well and just say, look, I will, you know, if I can go out for an hour and run at lunchtime, I will work. I will do my work. I will work a half hour later in the evening. So I think it's about getting that balance right. I think it's a little bit about enjoying it, a lot about motivation, but about just proving that you can do it to the people that surround you, so your bosses, yourself, and then seeing yourself as that sort of full-time athlete, full-time worker. I think that's the only way.
I love the way you look at it. You mentioned Jan as well a little bit there. How much does it help having someone doing a similar thing, so, like close to you? You kind of both do it, don't you? You work the same job, like, and I think that's important as well. I think on your own, it can get a bit tough, but with both of you there, you know, how important is that for you as well?
It's essential. Honestly, it's essential. Yayan lives as a crow flies half a mile from here, a mile to run to, which is brilliant. And actually, I lost my job working with Yayan a few years ago, but we'll brush over that. So actually working with Yayan and four years of training alongside of him and running with him, it was just the best motivation. You get out the door, you get it done. 5 o'clock came, boom, running kit on. Go to the toilet, off you go. that was it. Every single night, every training session. And it was just that motivation. If you didn't want to get out the door, he would get you out. If he didn't want to get out the door, I'd get him out. And it was as simple as that. And you'd push yourself. You'd push each other. Yayan's very good at doing that. It became more difficult when I lost my job, and there was a lot of circumstances that made it that I actually I did retire. That's a long story, but I took about 8 months off altogether. Torn Achilles, lost my drive, so long story, but it was hard. And it was Yayan that got me back into it. And then actually, as much as COVID is an awful thing, you've got to take the positives of it sometimes. So since COVID struck, since I got my new job just before COVID, which was a godsend, and my bosses being runners themselves, it's actually all started to click in place again. And actually now I can go running with Yayan again, working from home. I can go at lunchtime. I can recover more. I can sleep more. It's just falling into place again. But having that person with the same mindset as you to go out every day, it's the best thing you can find.
It seems like that, mate. Like I know social media, a lot of people put up fake stuff, but you can almost tell from your tweets, from your attitude on there, that you're brimming with confidence and like positivity at the moment. So it does seem like, you know, you're enjoying it as well, which I think.
Thank you, mate. Yeah.
No, I know it does, mate. Yeah. Because people can relate to that as well. And if they see you, you know, making success out of that, you know, people who work in 9 to 5, they're going to try and make it fit. So
that's what I'm really hoping will happen. I really hope that people will take note of that. And I will still say to anybody that's listening to this as well, that it's finding the right balance for you. That is key. Finding that right time to run, that right amount of mileage, a right number of S&C sessions, et cetera, right distance, et cetera. But yeah, if it just help those people run, and what I'm hoping people will see is that I will go through bad periods as well. I will. I got mild food poisoning 2 weeks ago, and I'm hoping that they see that athletes go through these things. Yeah. And actually, it's just about being sensible, getting yourself back out there, being consistent.
Yeah, I think that's it. Lam, you wanted to touch on the balance a little bit with the mileage.
Yeah, I think, and also just what you said just there, Tom, I wanted to say that as well. Like, I think I noticed most how you actually put on the training what you were meant to do and then sometimes what you ended up doing. So I think it'd be so easy for you, like with the food poisoning, to just pass it off. At the end of the week, you just say, oh, well, I was down for 8 mile easy, rather than I think you missed a few reps of your session or something like that. But then you actually say, I set out to do this, something happened and I had to change it, because like Matt said, I think when we spoke to Jenny last week about just like a lot of athletes, they just put up all these mega sessions they do, and that's all you see, and you don't realize the amount that people like at a level like yourself actually have the problems that kind of everyday runners have as well.
They really do. Actually, it's quite funny because my mindset completely changed on that Tuesday session that you're talking about, where I dropped out after the second rep because of my stomach, and it wasn't pretty.
That's
it was a case of It was literally a case of, honestly, it was in my mind, I was going, oh man, what am I going to tell my Twitter followers now? They're not going to want to know that. Then I thought, actually, every runner goes through that. We all do it. We've all had a bad stomach halfway through a run. Really jumped into the bushes.
100%. K1 meals, I remember, in uni.
Yeah, we used to wolf them down at like 5:30 and be on nitrate.
Six, yeah.
We've all done it, boys. A couple of beers beforehand. Yeah, a bad choice.
But yeah, no, going back to the balance. So what about your social life as well? Because obviously it's one thing fitting in training and working, but then how do you then wind down as well? Because I think some people find it hard to even get some time to wind down or go to the pub after work and things like that. So how do you do all three? How do you keep your mind kind of at rest sometimes?
It's a little bit tougher again, actually, because my family own farm, or a farm, not farm, so they own a farm in Mid Wales. So most weekends, COVID provided, obviously, I have to go home and work on a farm, which is tough work, actually, you know. And it's enjoyable. I love it. I love being out and doing it. So it becomes a bit more tougher. I reckon I go home once every other weekend to work on a farm. And luckily, there's no livestock, so it's a little bit easier than what it could be. It's only cutting hedges, cutting the grass, et cetera, et cetera. But it does become difficult to find that time, because you find on those weekends, probably working 60, 70, 80 hour a week sometimes. So it's a long time. But luckily, I think for me, and this is where I would probably struggle to resonate with certain people, is that actually, certain people's wrong term, some people, is that actually I really enjoy my own company. I love sitting down, having a pint, watching football. That will do me lovely. I got a really caring family in general, but my girlfriend in particular as well. So she's also she's kind of a movie buff. She loves movies, and we just love sitting down, putting a TV on, watching a movie and unwinding. Yeah, we have friends over. Yes, we have a bit of a social life, but actually I'd rather be sat in my home with a bottle of wine or a beer than being out doing it. So it's difficult for me as it would be for certain people who really love that aspect of their life.
I think a lot of runners are like that though. Just obviously running is quite an individual sport. Like 90% at a time, you'll go out, you'll run on your own, you're in your own head. So I think a lot of runners have a similar sort of outlook on social life.
Jake Whiteman put it perfectly, to be fair to him, on Instagram months and months ago, just as COVID was hitting, and his comment was, long distance runner, been social distance in my whole life. It's true. It is so true. So actually, I don't think it's, from our perspective, it's not as difficult. But I think the key, regardless, and what I found with some of my mates, I have got a couple of mates.
You had that in there.
I have to put it in there. I think what we found with it though is that some of them have just had to find that something else to do. Be that learning DIY around the house, be that having a drink in the house, be that finding a different hobby of sorts. And I know it's difficult. One of my good mates really struggles. And actually from him, it was, okay, bought a house, let's do it up. Painted every room, done his garden up, loved every minute of it. And it was just something a little bit different for him to take him away from that pain of not being able to do what he loves to do. And that actually, he's running probably the best he's run in a long time as well. So it's nice to see.
Interesting. So with the training then as well. So do you think your training is influenced a lot by the balance you have to create as well?
100%.
How does James, for instance, help you with that?
I think the good thing, and Matty will know this as well as anybody because his dad there, but I know his dad, but that coach athlete balance has got to be right. And the coach has got to understand you, and you've got to understand what your coach is trying to get in there. So actually, we've had, 8 weeks of training now that I've put up on Twitter. I haven't done a morning run yet because I haven't done a morning run since Tulsa in 2012. And actually, I will train twice a day, but that's a run, weights, or run circuits. And that's different for me. And I'll go into that now in a moment. But Fee understands that. And he is trying to put those morning runs in it, but he doesn't come back and say, why haven't you done a morning run? He understands that actually, it's tough. It's tough getting up at 7 o'clock to walk a dog, to come in, to start work at 7:30. to run at lunch, etc., etc. It is a tough thing to do. And actually, it's almost this training block. I sat down with Fee and said, right, what are we going to do? And we looked at him. We said, well, I've got an hour at lunch. I've got an hour that I can run at lunch. Ideally, I can get a shower in that if I can. So, okay, what about let's do these 8-9 mile runs throughout the day? So that's upping my mileage by a couple of miles each run than what I'm used to, but it's getting in during that lunchtime. Nice. Okay, not happy to do morning runs. Let's do another weight session. Let's get that in there. Let's see how that adapts to it. And it's just about finding that balance. But the one thing more than anything that I've learned is as an athlete, you've got to find what works for you. I went to Tulsa. I ran 90 miles, 18, 90 miles a week, one 100 mile. Oh, I didn't enjoy it. I hated it mentally. It was just awful. It was not for me. It is for some people. People love it. I don't like running. I really don't. I like the sessions when you're running quick. That's what I live for. I love
it. Always remember that. Yeah, about you, mate. Yeah. Definitely, pinging around the track, fast reps. You know, that is, you can tell that's what you enjoy.
That's what puts a smile on your face. Going out and doing a 10-mile run, that's not really what I enjoy. I'm enjoying it more now, actually, but I guess that's because of the extra rest and you know, just a bit of stress release. But I came back and Fee said, all right, before you left for Tulsa, you were on about 30 miles a week and you were just doing speed stuff. Why don't we combine both? And actually, we found out that is what worked. And actually, I still enjoyed it. Yes, you have tough periods, everybody does, but I still enjoyed it. And it just started to click season after season after season of doing that. And it's about finding that right balance and going, I love doing that. I've got to do that. My body can handle that. I need to do that to allow my body to handle that and just get in that circle in place, so to speak.
Man, I always remember, I mean, my dad's a bit like that as well, but Thee's good at that. Like, he always, I mean, at uni, he always understood, like, look, if you've just had a full day of lectures, like 9 till 5 or 6 or whatever, he was always, you know, he always understood that that's going to take it out of you. Even if you didn't do anything physically, just mentally, you're going to be off the ball a little bit. So he'd be like session on a different day, or he was always flexible and took into account like lifestyle.
That's the best coach you can have.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of coaches who just look at it and go, oh, well, you know, you've just been sitting down all day, like get out and do 10 miles. But I think that's fine for a week or two. And then it just builds up and you just get mentally so drained and almost demotivated. And the thought of just doing anything is like, you know. Well,
that's exactly it. Look at the turnover rate of athletes that you see. It's in school level and university level. Purely, almost certainly down to the fact that coaches are probably pushing them too hard or they're pushing themselves too hard. And actually, university is harder than what people think it is. It really is. It's tiring, it's mentally draining, it's emotionally draining at times as well. And actually, you've got to find that balance with your athlete to make them enjoy it. Yai and I have seen so many athletes come and go. So many athletes come and go. We're just about the only ones left. and it's for that reason. You see people leave, go off to different universities, do too many miles in America, come back, burn out, etc., etc. It's just about finding that balance. And actually, if you can use running as a stress release, as catharsis, then that is probably the best thing you can do.
I think that's it as well. Like, some people will just compare themselves to like their best self. So say when you were at Tulsa and you would have had a bit more time on your hands, you were doing 80, 90 mile weeks. I think some people come back, they may go into a full-time job and they think, well, I've got to keep up doing what I was doing in Tulsa if I want to remain the same or improve. And I think, like you say, sometimes just dropping the training a little bit, but doing an extra weight session or doing something which you can manage, speeding up your runs or whatever, you get just as good as benefit from, you know?
That's 100% it, mate. I could not agree more, mate. I think that's well put, really well put.
Sweet. What you got,
Lon? Yeah, so Tom, you're actually moving up to the 5K now, I see, as well. That sparks my interest because I've always thought, I think, when me and Matt started uni in 2014, you've got like, for someone who I think you, it's fair to say you claim to be a pure 1500 guy. You've run 1:48 for 800. You run a sub 30 10K on the road. Like, that's a pretty impressive range. So why the 5K and why only now is what I ask.
It's a good question, actually. And now I've seen Welsh Athletic standard, I think I might switch back to a 1500. 13:33, I'm gonna laugh. It's 3:39 to 15. That's not, I don't think that's as near as bad.
Yeah.
I think that's doable. I do. The reason being, I tore my left Achilles and I had incredibly bad tendinopathy in my right Achilles the week before the Commonwealth Games. So actually, when I was competing in the Commonwealth Games, I had a torn Achilles and a really bad other Achilles. So I came back to the UK and Lieber, the physio in Welsh Athletics, said, I'm going to have to stop. Lost my job. So I had no choice but to take a few painkillers and carry on a season to do a bit of pacemaking to make a bit of money. but it just put my Achilles in. And, you know, to be fair to Lieber, she told me it's going to make it worse and worse. And it got to a point when it was assessed I would need 4 or 5 months off altogether to recover from it. So I thought, okay, let's do that. And I didn't know cross training or anything like that. But then I came back and I just thought, do you know what? If my Achilles are going to start to go like that from being in spikes so often on a track, why not one last hurrah, see what you can do for 5K? You've never given it a go. Just see what you can do. And actually, that allows you then to wear flats. You have a 4 mil drop. You have an 8 mil drop. It's much more miles. It's much less aggressive in your spikes. Good for the Achilles. Should get you through. Give it one last go. If you fail, you've done most of what you want to do. Give or take a few bits. You know, I'd love to have gone to the Olympics. That's never going to happen. When you look at the likes of Jake Hayward and a talent like that coming through, there's no chance. but I've done most of what I want to do. So, okay, let's just give that 5K a go. If I fail, I fail. But I know, I think the thing that you will find with runners, especially at the very top levels, your Grices, your O'Heefs, Chris O'Heer is a brilliant example of this. Zach, your brother, brilliant example of this. There's a tenacity that actually you will never be happy until you've given it 100%. I think we all know that if we were in the future and we look back and went, I didn't give that 100%, we would look back at ourselves and go, why? That was my one chance. Why didn't I not just give that 100%? So I just figured, why not? Go out and give it 100%. What's going to happen? You know, you get injured, you get injured. You know, you get that balance right. It goes well. You could end up going to Commonwealth Games, running potentially 13:32, for example. And brilliant. What a thing to end on. And actually, if I then go into coaching, I could turn around to people and say, I ran 13:32. And it gives you a bit more credential. And I think it's, yeah, why not? Give it a go.
I totally agree, mate. It's almost that unsettling factor that the top athletes get. You know, each year they're like, oh my God, I could have just done this a little bit. I could have done this more. And they just, you can see almost like a constant, unsettled behavior. They just want to keep, you know, plugging at it until they're, you know, believe in themselves. They've done all they can do.
That's exactly it. I think if you ever did one of those tests with athletes, you know, those personality tests, I think we'd probably all come out with that tenacity figure at 100 and everything else probably at 0. I want to do it. And I think it's a defining factor. I watched Chris O'Hare was a turning point in my career. Chris O'Hare, I mean, I guess coming back and watching.
You were at Tulsa with him, weren't you?
Which was great. Yeah, sorry, I should explain that. And actually, watching Chris O'Hare, I mean, coming back and watching Steve Mitchell and Dave Bishop, guy I've met, there was where I failed for years was mentally. I give up so easily. And actually, I mean, this is a great session. I remember Chris O'Hare, Tulsa. And we did 3 times a K and then 5 times 300. Right? And it was a lovely session. It's one of my favorite sessions to do that. It's a brilliant session. 3 times a K, 5 times 300. And we did the Ks ticking off nice. I can't remember what we were. Not particularly quick. And then we did it was 5 times 400.
Yeah.
And Gully, the coach, said, right, O'Hare, take a first one. 59. O'Hare went and ran, I think it was a 52. And he was on the floor, absolutely wiped on the floor. I looked down there and I thought, well, that's him done. Anyway, yeah. 1 minute later, get up. Albert gets over here. Off he goes. 52 again. Back on the floor. Absolutely wiped come the last rep. Still ran a 51. You just think, woof. What a mindset to have. What that tough mindset. Just brilliant to watch an athlete go in like that. And I'm sure you guys have seen it yourselves. You know, Zach, I've seen do many great sessions like that. And it's just that. I'm going to run harder.
It's hard to look at, though. Like you say, for I don't know, if you doubt yourself or, you know, like you're saying you're not quite mentally as strong as them. I know I think that a little bit as well. You know, you look at people and you're like, Jesus Christ, like, you know. Have you worked on that at all? Have you, like, your mental game, have you actively worked on it? Or have you just sort of carried on training and just sort of said, oh, you know, that will just come as I get fitter? Or
it was about... what year would it have been? This is testing me now, but it would have been, I watched Mitchell do a session. And watching him do that session and him getting back up, I went to myself, okay, I need to be mentally tougher. And then from that day onwards, every single session that I did, no matter how much I was hurting, if I had, even if I had a terrible rep, let's say I had six reps and my fifth rep was just awful, I'd get back up and I'd go as hard as I freaking could. And every single session, I have that tenacity of just going and just staying there and holding on, especially when you train with Yayan, who's just that bit fitter than you. He's always just like one step ahead. He's a brilliant athlete. He'll run some serious times if he can race right now. He's in 28-30 shape, I'll say, thereabouts. An unbelievable shape. And it's just that mindset. And that's been what, right, I'm staying with him. This is hurting. I'm staying with him. And actually, it's worked well for me other than training with Jake Hayward, when that's just not a possibility. I did a session with Jake once. First time he joined James Fee. I don't know if I've ever told you boys this. First time he ever joined James Fee. And he was 16 and I was 28, 27, something like that. So I was prime sort of my point. And and somebody had told me, this guy's a good athlete. I was like, 16, he would be all right. And we had 5 300s. And I was like, I'll teach him a lesson. Oh, watch this now, watch this. Literally, take a first rep, mate. 41, right on my back. All right. Okay, you take a second rep, 39. All right. I'll take a third, 38. Okay, right on my back. Jake takes a 4:37, and I'm blowing up my backside. James on a finish, no, Jake on a finish line goes, James, can we run fast now? I was like, are you kidding me? So we get up, and right, let's do this. And he drops me in about 5 meters, and I get over the finish line. I think I've had probably the worst rep I've probably ever had. I'm thinking to myself, I looked at my watch, I ran 37.2. He ran 34.1. 34.1. That was the day I just thought, all right, there's only so much mindset can do you to do for you.
Yeah,
it was always about teaching myself to go. When it hurts, go. When it hurts, go. And you will have bad moments, you'll talk yourself out of it, you will find excuses, you'll find your stomach hurting, you'll find your legs hurting, you'll find those excuses. But it's about telling yourself, no freaking excuses today. Okay, I'm having a bad patch. I'm just having a bad patch. Yeah. Let's get through it. Let's sit on the back of Yayan and see how far I can get. It's easier said than done, actually. But
I like how you've almost actively acknowledged that. You're actively working on it. I think that's key. You know, sometimes people just put it on the back burner and go, you know, they're just fit than me at this moment of time. They can push themselves harder. But I do find, though, it's almost, you know, the more unfit you are, the harder it is to really, really push yourself. You know, when you're screaming fit, you can just really go to the well. Yeah. But sometimes when you're like really unfit, you're like, I just can't go on.
No, you bang on. When you're fully rolled in and you're feeling easy, it's actually harder to keep that pace going. It really is. Yeah. Whereas you're telling yourself, I'm not fit. I need to get fit.
I think it's just so nice to see, Tom. Like, it just reminded me that I remember this, like when we were at uni and like seeing you train, just how supportive you are the other guys in the group. Because I think some people like...
Got you, man.
Some people who are kind of, I'd class you as like the top end of your training group, if someone takes them out in a session, are a bit bummed out about it and a bit like, oh, why is he doing that to me today and things like that. But like, I think it's clear from you that you're just actually happy for your fellow athletes as well.
Thank you, mate.
And it's just so nice to see, especially in athletics where some people can be a bit, I think people care about their own performance quite a lot, which is obviously important, but it's so nice to see that you actually see it as almost a team aspect, and you're happy for the guys you train with as well.
Yeah, 100%. I'll back him up on that, Tom. Like, I remember when me and Lam came to uni, freshers, first couple of sessions, you would be encouraging everyone. You know, it was you were a really good sort of figure for the group.
Oh, honestly, yeah, that means a lot. I say it sincerely, we've been so lucky with people turning up to the group. You two, for example, just such nice people. And then we haven't had a bad egg join the group in that whole time. It's just made it so easy. Like Aaron Phelps, what a lovely guy. Right? You know, just so many people like that have just joined the group, and it's just been so easy. And everybody just cares for everybody in the group. So no, honestly, it means a lot, but you guys have made it easy.
Yeah, we'll give a shout out to Cardiff Met when we learn, because it is a great group.
Yeah.
And it's just there's so many like different characters there, and I think that just brings it to the group. Like, you've got people like Kelsey and then like yourself, Marshall. It's such a good mixed bunch.
It really is. I think it'll. I think it will really. Now that Jake is running as well, yeah. Jake Smith is running as well as he
looks
is.
Like it's taken off.
Yeah. It'll take off. Yeah, and Kieran's running well, and Yian's still there. And I'll still be there. I think it's particularly Jake. I think people will start to go, oof, I want to train with him. I really want to train with him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. And like Matt said, it's just such a nice mix. Like, you've got so many guys turning up there, and you've got right at the top level. You've got, like, world-class runners at the front. But there's also people who are just there because they want to go and have fun at Bucks Cross B race. It's just great that everyone can still get on.
It really is. And I think all that you really need is just that work rate when it comes to the session. That's all that really anybody in that group cares about. So long as you go out and give that session a good go, then brilliant. It doesn't matter how well you're running. It doesn't matter whether you're miles behind, 100 meters ahead of everybody else. Go and just give it a go. And I think that's what we love down here. I think it's actually almost built into the athletes to join the group. This is the attitude you need. And people run so well from it. They really do.
What looking back, what I think is, you know, I like so much about Met as well was, like, you would meet pretty much the same time, the same place, almost like every Tuesday and Thursday at 6 foot. So it was accessible for everyone. It wasn't like I know down like St. Mary's, like, there's nothing wrong with it, but, you know, they meet at like 10 in the morning. Well, if you've got a lecture or people who, I don't know, you know, not all students are like dedicated athletes, they're willing to skip lectures to go to training. So I just thought it was so good. You know, every Tuesday, Thursday, 6 p.m. at Nike or whatever, you meet up and anyone could come. And that was a good thing about it, looking back now.
I think we got lucky in the fact that at the time when the group first started, JT was working full-time and actually Bishop was starting to work a bit and work for his dad a bit, I think he was at the time. So he was starting to work full-time. So actually 6 o'clock became the thing. And then the athletes bought into it and it was just, this is the mindset, this is done, this is it. And then over time, NIAC, the indoor athletics track, for example, that became, you had to go on there at 6 o'clock. You didn't have much choice because there was lectures throughout the day. And I think it just turned, like you said, just turned into that perfect 6 o'clock, lovely, anybody turn up, crack on.
Yeah, and I think having that like mix of guys who are students and then guys like yourself who are working, it's almost like saying to our students, like, oh, if Tom can go and work a 9 to 5 and then smash me in this case session, I can't complain about having a 2-hour lecture 5 hours ago.
That's so true. Yeah.
I don't work hard, gents.
There you go. I think that's kind of, we want to speak to you about the Commonwealth Games a bit in more detail in part two, but I think that's bringing us quite nicely to the end of part one. Just before we end, could you give me like probably the favourite moment of your running career so far?
I was trying to think of this earlier. It's kind of, I thought you might ask something like that. I think my favourite moment, and I'll go into a bit of detail now, is breaking the 4-minute mark for the first time in Athlone.
I thought you might say that, yeah.
I rocked up to a hotel that night. I was having such a bad time in my life at that time. And actually the week before, Yian broke 4-minute mile in Nyack. It should have been my moment. I was like,
yeah, I remember.
I remember that. That was good.
To the race as well?
I dropped that.
Yeah, I remember.
It was a really special moment for me. But I remember rocking up to the hotel. I landed after work at night. I probably caught a plane, I don't know, 6, 7 o'clock, whatever time it was. So I landed in wherever it was. I can't remember. Wherever you fly into, and it's an hour and a half drive. So I got to the hotel about 9:30 and I got my key to a room and I went into a room. And in a room, there was this enormous double bed, the biggest super king bed. It is just the biggest bed I've ever seen. And then in the corner was one solo, and probably no exaggeration, it was the smallest bed I've ever seen. Like my nephew would have struggled to fit in that bed. It was that small. I looked at the two beds. I was like, well, I'm the only one here. I'll have a big bed. Yeah, screw that. It'd be great. So I got into this big bed, right? At 11 o'clock, turned the TV off, whatever it was, and the door opens. All the people that could have walked in, it was Harry AA. I looked at him. I went,
oh my God.
I'll take a small bed. I was curled up. The smaller, I've probably had the worst night's sleep I ever had in my life. I think it just, you know, little things like that just make the moment that much more memorable.
Yeah.
I love racing in Ireland. It's the best place you can race. The guys are so nice out there. Brilliant night after with a Guinness. It is freaking spot on. And those, because I race it so often, the guys that run the events, they know me well and they were so chuffed when I knew I'd broken four, and I was so happy because I was going for a bad time. I had a lot of good mates there, Dale King, Clutterbuck, and Elliot Jarre, loads of really sort of close running mates. And it was just such a special time. It really was. So I think that for me would be my number one moment. Yeah. A lot of people say, you know, European champs when I won gold, but I got so lucky at that event. I mean, I shouldn't have been here in the first place. There were countless athletes that could have chosen to be in that team and didn't get there. Chose not to go there. And Charlie Grice got injured just before. Unfortunately for him, I love Charlie, and it was a sad moment for him. And then I just had the most phenomenal team in Melissa Courtney, in Cameron Boyack, and in Sarah McDonald, and they just made life so easy for me. Any athlete could have done what I did.
Opportunity, mate. You got to be in the right place in the right time, and you were, so you got to take that one.
You've got to get lucky. And actually, you know, one thing I said to Fee is, like, there's a chance I couldn't make this team. I said, I got to get really lucky, but there's a chance I could. So what I did is I got up at 5:30 every Tuesday and Friday to do a grass session, because it's the only time I could do it working full time.
Right. Yeah.
So I went down to a local park, stuck a head torch on, and did both sessions just to try and get myself in shape for when I hit one cross country race to hit it hard.
Yeah.
It was that, but there was so much luck involved. You know, Tom Lancashire made the senior men's team, and he would have been first choice for that team. So it was more luck. I mean, a team, so we were so far ahead, and anybody could have done what I did. But yeah, it was that 4 minute mile, I think, for me.
Yeah. Ideal. Right. We'll catch you in part two then, Tom.
Yeah, look, welcome to part two. As we said, you touched on it a little bit, like going to the commies and stuff and the build-up. You said you had a little, well, not a little injury, but quite a big injury. But look, let's talk about that, because obviously you've been full-time. How did you go about preparing for that? You know, I know a lot of athletes who are going to that Games almost took, two months, or, you know, they'd be heavy in training camps. They had all the time in the world to prepare. How did you go about preparing for that?
There were a couple of things with it. The first thing we did was just pull the season back a little bit. So actually, whilst we would have been doing track work perhaps in, you know, May, April time, sorry, April, May, June time, I'm sorry, well, I guess May, June time, should I say, we were doing it in March, April time, because the race was a bit earlier in the season than what it typically would be. So that was the first thing we did, which was probably a cause of the Achilles issue. I was doing no weights because I tore a ligament in my wrist. Running around a lake, not doing anything else, but running around a lake. So I couldn't do any weights. And I think that was a contributing factor towards my bad Achilles. We were lucky that Jan and I, when we were working for Sport Tape, as we did, they said, look, just go and enjoy it. They'll look after the company. So the bosses looked after the company for 6 weeks, so Jan and I could go to Australia. So it was almost like we had that camp anyway, which was lovely. The only problem was I really, really struggled there mentally, emotionally, just physically, everything. I was just not, I hated pretty much every minute of it. Near as makes no difference. It was probably the worst time.
If it's like a little bit personal, I don't want to pry too much, but if you could just open up a little bit on why you didn't enjoy it and why it was such a hard sort of experience for you.
I don't know what it is about me, but I think when people spend a bit of time with me, I don't know what it is, but whether I grind people down, I don't know. So I think I struggled to be with people for that amount of time and to not occupy my mind. I struggle a little bit with mental health. So I've never told anybody that, but now it's public now. A couple of people know, but not many. So I do struggle a little bit. And I think it was just, it was hard not having something to occupy my mind, not having that I work to just keep my mind ticking over from 9 to 5, and then just being with people constantly when actually I knew I'd probably grind them down and people wouldn't necessarily like me as much, and I've just the demons just all sort of kind of started to come out, and it was hard, and then the Achilles started to go really bad. It was a torrid time. It was my fault as much as anybody. I tried everything that I could to try not to go out there early, but if the boss had said go, so I went. And actually, if I knew I should have only gone out there for a couple of weeks beforehand and just taken a risk, because I knew I was going to struggle. And it's just I guess I like to occupy my mind. It's probably the safest place for me to be.
It's interesting you say that, though, because I think like a training camp is such an intense process, and you're almost 24/7, like with the people you're out there with as well. And I think that is very hard. Like you say, if you just like to take a little bit of time for yourself. I know, like when I've been away with my brother and stuff, like he's my brother, like we are super close, but there are times where it's like, crikey, I just need a break. I just need to go and, take a day or something to myself. And to be fair, we're really good at doing that. Like, you know, we're pretty chilled. Like he'll just sit in his room on his own, sometimes, and I'll do the same. But I totally see where you're coming from in that point of view, because I think almost when you're at a championship like that, it's almost you have to try and be even more of a team, and you're with people even more. So it's interesting you say that. I don't think it's a bad thing. And it's probably good that you now know. So if it ever happens again, you'll stamp your foot and you'll be like, look, I know what's best for me. I'm just going to do that. And we've heard like, well, Farah just hopping into like championships, 3-4 days before. And it's probably, I know his is like sort of altitude based and whatever, he needs to keep up his training and stuff, but there is a factor. He probably just doesn't want to be around the buzz, around the, around everyone else he's competing against. Because I think when you're at camps, you're matching yourself up against your competitors all the time as well.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it. The guys are with are just nicest guys, and really, like, I love their company. Nothing it was just,
yeah.
Just the demons in my head that were just,
yeah,
it was just playing on my mind. And I almost like I wanted to be with people and I didn't want to be with people. And it was completely my fault, but I knew it was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen. I knew I was going to grind myself down more than anything, which yeah, obviously impacts on other people. So it's just this big, just not a good experience, really. Don't get me wrong. Brisbane, unbelievable place. Gold Coast, actually Gold Coast isn't that. As much as I hate to say it, it's a bit touristy, but it was, and actually competing, the emotion that comes over you when you step out on a track at a Commonwealth Games like that was just insane. Like, absolutely freaking insane. The noise from the crowd, bonkers. So all that experience was phenomenal. It was just that 6 weeks of just not having something to occupy my mind. And just, it was almost like I was spending the whole time thinking about what impact I was having on people and worrying about how I was impacting people, which is not a good place for anybody to be, any athletes around me or me. So it just wasn't right for me. But yeah, the actual race itself, unreal. Just such an experience, even though I was not in any state to be on that start line. I still figured you give it a go.
It's good you could differentiate, though, and still look back and be like, even though I did, my time was kind of like tarnished a little bit, it was still an amazing experience.
That's the best thing you can do with it. The absolute best thing you can do.
So do you think that actually your full-time job as well, like almost helps you with that? Because say you're in America out with one of these pro teams and you were constantly thinking about training and things like that. Do you think actually your work and having other things to occupy your mind in the day help with your training?
I think there's two things to that. In essence, I was basically a pro being in university in Tulsa, and the same thing happened. I grinded on people, yeah, and it just didn't end well. People just ended up really not liking me, and it's an understandable thing. I've learned to deal with that. It's just me. But actually, I think the one thing I will say to athletes, probably on a more important note, is that you've got to not worry about being a full-time worker and a full-time athlete. There's nothing you can do about that. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it. If you're not in a position where you can go pro, semi-pro, you can't. You've got to work. So why use that as an excuse? And it's sometimes difficult, but actually you've got to look at that from a different mindset and almost a positive mindset and go, okay, well, if I was a pro, would I be doing one run too many? Would I be overdoing the miles? Would I end up with a stress fracture? Would I overdo the training? Would I burn out? And you actually just got to think about it as, okay, I'm never going to know the answer to that. And yes, it may have propelled me, but do you know what? There's nothing I can do. So there's no point using it as an excuse and no point in looking on it and frowning upon it. You've just got to take the positives from it. You really have. And the biggest positive of working full time by a long way is that you've got income. And if you've got income, you're safe. And that's a typical thing for an athlete. There's a lot of athletes that are on that line, a bread line, a real, real tight line between being able to afford things and not, because it's the nature of a sport. It's not a well-watched sport. It's not a media sport anymore, which is a shame. But there's athletes.
We were talking about that a little bit last week, weren't we, Ollie? The pressures of almost, like you say, if you've got an income, at least you're getting an income, you can relax. You don't have to worry about that. And then you can just, like you say, you just train as much as you can.
You're absolutely right. There is that balance. And actually, you've got a full-time job. You know you've got income. You know you're safe. There's never that pressure, never that worry. Never, where's that next race? I'm going to have to earn that £300 for my food for the month, which is a really nice, positive way of looking at things. But then as a full-time athlete, you can't look at that as a negative. So it's that balance. It really is. It's working out, okay, this is where I'm at. This is what I do. This is how my life is right now. How can I turn that into a positive?
Mm. Yeah. Really interesting you say that. And I think, do you mind talking about, I think you mentioned in part one how, after the Commonwealth Games, you felt like the pressure to go and do those pacing jobs. And I think it just kind of highlights just the unglamorous side to that kind of elite racing world. So if you wouldn't mind just telling us a bit more about that.
Yeah, that's not a problem at all. I lost my job, probably a better way of putting it. won't go into too much detail on that one, but it was, Liba, my physio, said it's probably the worst Achilles she's ever seen, both. And actually, she took me out of a room. There's another patient on the bed in a room when she was treating me, and she this is coming back from the games, and she said I had to take her out of the room because I didn't want to break a news to you here. And I was like, well, there's nothing I can do. I was like, right, okay, so I haven't got income until I get a new job, so I've got that pressure now to go and either pace or get a new job quickly. And it's difficult to get a new job quickly. It's not an easy thing to do, is it? So I had to go and pace. I had no choice. So there was an undue pressure. I did not enjoy one bit. But I guess I was fortunate in a fact that JT is well connected, that the Morton games were coming up and those guys loved me, which was nice. Letterkenny's straight after the Morton game, so there's another pacing gig, and there were other pacing gigs around. But I didn't ever wanted to be in that position where I was running for my next paycheck. I didn't want that. Yeah. I did not want that. I didn't like that. Luckily, got a job in about a month and a half, working for a local radio station, which is the worst job in the world, but that's not the point. Never work for a radio station. It's hard. There's glamorous sides to it, but yeah, don't. So it was, there's a lot of pressure to it, and I wouldn't enjoy that myself. Some people would love it. You know, some people would really thrive off that, I'm sure of it, but yeah. Nah, not for me.
Mm. So what are you doing now, Tom? Because you seem pretty happy with work and stuff now. And I don't want this to be like I want you to talk about good things that are happening as well.
Yeah. So actually, working for a radio station, I called up a guy in Cardiff who started up a sports company called Sports Injury Fix, which is a site where you can find, well, if you're a therapist, you can use it as a booking platform, a diary management and patient note system. And if you're a patient, you can go on there and you can find a therapist in your area that can help you with your injury. It's a brilliant site. It's called sportsinjuryfix.com. And I sold him some radio stuff. And as I sold it to him, he said to me, next topic, don't suppose you fancy a job, do you? I was like, yes, I hate my job. Yes, let's do this. Didn't even think twice. So I went and met him and Mike James, local physio, called the Endurance Physio. Great guy to follow if you don't follow him, the Endurance Physio. We've gotten like house on fire, and it's just been the best job working for them. I my job is between the tech team. I sort of do everything, but my main job is between the tech team and the therapist using the platform to try and work out what the therapists want and tell the tech team to build it. And it's a brilliant job, just that client experience manager. I just love every minute of my job right now. But the best thing about it is they are athletes themselves. Mike is the only Welshman to have swum the English Channel and around Jersey. He's done quadruple Ironman. He's Team GB triathlete, loves it. Malcolm done an Ironman, loves running, loves it all. So they know running. They go to the gym at lunch or run every lunch themselves. So it was just the perfect fit. And over time, I proved my worth, proved that I worked bloody hard and that I could do my job well. Yeah. And actually, they're happy for me to go out for an hour at lunch. Not a problem at all. More than happy with it because they know I will get up early and work, finish late to get my job done. That is such an important thing, getting that trust from your employee.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, Tom. And I think it goes with what you said. Like, I think when we first got on, just about how there's so many great people in the running community. And I mean, I see it, like other runners will understand about your training commitments and things like that. And as long as you've got that really kind of understanding relationship, then that's really good for you.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, no, that's definitely it. And that's the key to being sort of full-time athlete, full-time worker. But you're reiterated, there's so many nice people in this running world that people will help you out. If you find that right balance, the right teammates, the right training partners, it's just the best sport you can do.
Mm. 100%.
Yeah, it sounds like a good company, man. Really sort of good platform to use.
So Tom, just before we end, really, we kind of wanted to know if there's anything you think could be done better for kind of athletes in like a similar position to you. So I think it's kind of, I hope I'm like all right in saying that you're like pretty much like on, you've been on that cusp almost of being between a pro and someone who's working it. If you think there's like kind of anything that could be done better in the sport, because I think if you look at places like the US, probably someone like yourself, run, you're 337, you're probably on a full-time contract in the US, whereas in the UK, it's a bit of a different story. And I don't know if you've got any opinions on what you think could help guys in similar situations, like from governing bodies or anyone else.
It's such a hard situation. It really is. There's no money in a sport. You know, Welsh Athletics funded me for 2 years and I was bottom tier. I was £1,000 a year for 2 years. And that's the only funding literally I've ever had at that level. So actually, what can be done about it? It's just tough. The only thing I can think of, because you're going to struggle to get teams like that team New Balance Manchester. You're going to struggle to get people to Brighton Phoenix, for example, to put money into things like that. You really are. So the only thing I can think of is there's probably room for somebody to start a company which helps athletes get sponsorship. Mm. Now, the one thing I will say, there's a couple of brilliant companies out there, because I did a bit of work for them actually, it's a good point, I forgot to mention it when I lost my job. And I can't think of their blooming name, sorry, but you can actually go out and do school talks. Mm-hmm. And they pay you quite handsomely actually for it, which is, it could be that difference between you being a pro and a semi-pro. It could be that extra sort of grand a month, and you're not doing an awful lot of hard work. I think you turned up to the school at 9 and you finished by about 1. And that was, you get paid quite nicely for it. And there's a few little bits and pieces like that. Team Project Run's another one where you can go and do school days. You know, I don't know, there's a few of them about, but it's probably a market there for somebody to start a business to help get people a little bit of extra income, perhaps to have those connections with maybe major banks, footballing teams, etc., etc. Because if you look at Europe, you've got Benfica, you've got Barcelona, you've got all these big football teams that are breeding runners, that are putting in money back into running
their own clubs. And yeah, because I've seen that, because I coach hockey as well, and like a lot of the football clubs in Europe, they have like academies for all sports, and they use their money and their infrastructure to fund those things. And I think it's a really interesting point you make. So if anyone's listening to this who wants to help some athletes and just improve British distance running, I think that's something we'd all like to see. And I think definitely something needs to be done a lot more to help guys in the UK.
Because if you think about it, I say it's only, but so, you know, even if you're not living with your family, and you could live with your family, but even if you're renting or bought a house, you know, you could go semi-time work. You can go semi-time work, is that right?
Semi-time full work.
Yeah, sorry, part-time work. Exactly. Sorry, I lost the plot now. Yeah, part-time work. And all you really need is an extra sort of $7,000 or $8,000 in. And there'll be plenty of companies out there, Ineos, Man United, there's plenty of NatWest, HSBC, there's plenty of companies out there that probably could, Admiral in Cardiff, for example, probably could fund a few athletes for a few years. So maybe there is something that could be done there, but the biggest thing needs to be the media, and there's nothing that we can do to influence that, which is a big shame. But the sport needs to be in a limelight, it needs to be interesting, it needs to be made fun, and it's not. People don't want to wait an hour and watch somebody talk about a 200 meter race for half an hour. Then you've got a 1500 meter race, and that's talked about for half an hour. Nobody wants that. People want 200 meter race, 100 meter race, 1500 meter race, 5k race, hour. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. That will make it interesting. Mm. That something needs to be done with the media as well, but over my head.
Yeah, I think Matt and I always say, like, if guys like ourselves and yourself like can't get interested in the sport, then there's not much help for new fans and things like that.
That's exactly it. There's certain races that could be done to make it interesting. The Murder Mile, I love that concept. I think people would love to watch that.
That one they did in Australia, they did that meet where it was all like crazy distances and things like that.
Power something, was it? I can't quite remember. And then
Usain Bolt's team there and things like that.
That's it. Things like that. And then, in America, they run the distance medley relay, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Which is a great fun to be in as an athlete and a brilliant race to watch because it just mixes it all up. So little bits and pieces like that, but we got no influence.
No, exactly. We can talk about it all we like.
If Seb Coe's listening.
Yeah, there you go. Send me a message. You can sponsor the podcast as well.
Sort it out. Head of HSBC, give us some money.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on, Tom, and thank you for just being so open and honest as well about some of like the kind of the highs and the lows of your career. I really appreciate that.
No, thank you for having me. More than anything, it's the first podcast I've ever been asked to do, so I was a bit nervous about it, to be honest. But thanks for having me. Honestly, it means a lot.
Yeah,
it's been brilliant. Cheers, mate.